leading hells. You can give those you once loved a world free of ghosts. You can do your duty. You can give them a chance at surviving the onslaught that must come. You can give them a chance to win one day. But not today. Not today. You have released your ties to strangers, to friends, to family, to your true love. Now, surrender to me, for it is your destiny. It is the meaning of your name, the reason for your existence. It is time. It is time. I know the moment everything changes. The moment Ma'atha joins with me so completely that I cannot tell where I end and the magic begins. I am back in my body, in Antium, standing before Lyra. It's as if no time has passed at all since she asked for my aid and I rejected her. When I look down into that beautiful face, I no longer see the girl I loved. I see someone lesser, someone who is aging, dying slowly, like all humans. I see a mortal.
Elias?
The girl, Lyra, speaks, and I turn to her. The djinn have a part to play in this world, and they must be set free. I speak gently because she is a mortal, and she will take this news hard. The world must be broken before it can be remade, I say, or else the balance will never be restored.
No,
she says.
Elias, no. This is the djinn we are speaking of. If they are free...
I cannot keep the balance alone. It is unfair to expect Lyra to understand. She is only immortal after all. The world will burn, I say. But it will be reborn from the ashes.
Elias,
she says,
how can you say this?
You should leave, I say. I do not wish to welcome you to the waiting place. Not yet. May the skies speed your way.
What the hells has that place done to you?
She cries.
I need your help, Elias. The people need you. There are thousands of scholars here. If I cannot get the star, then I can at least get them out. You could...
I must return to the waiting place, I say. Goodbye, Lyra of Serra. Lyra grabs my face and peers into my eyes. A darkness rises in her. Something that is fey, but not. It is more than fey. It is atavistic. The essence of magic itself, and it rages.
What have you done to him?
She speaks to Ma'atha, as if she knows he has joined with me, as if she can see him.
Give him back!
My voice, when it comes, is an unearthly rumble that isn't my own. I feel shoved to the side in my own mind, watching as I incline my head.
Forgive me. Dear one,
Ma'atha says through me,
it is the only way.
I back away from her and turn east, toward the forest of dusk. Moments later, I am through the masses of Karkans ravaging the city, then beyond them, speeding through the countryside, at last one with Ma'atha. But though I know I go now to my duty, some old part of me twinges, reaches out to whatever it is that I have lost. It feels strange.
It is the pain of what you have given up. But it will fade, Banu al-Ma'atha. You have endured much in a short time, learned much in a short time. You cannot expect to be ready overnight.
I search for the word.
It hurts. Surrender always does. but it will not hurt forever. Why me? I ask. Why do we have to change and not you? Why do we have to become less human instead of you becoming more so? The ocean waves thunder on, and it is man who must swim among them. The wind blows, cold and brittle, and it is man who must protect against it. The earth shakes and cracks, swallows and destroys, but it is man who must walk upon it. So it is with death. I cannot surrender, Elias. It must be you. I don't feel like myself anymore. Because you are not yourself. You are me. I am you. And in this way, we will pass the ghosts through. Let your world be spared from their predations.
He falls silent as we leave Antium far behind. Soon, I forget the fighting. I forget the face of the girl I loved. I think only of the task ahead. All is as it must be.
Chapter 54. Liar. Cook finds me beside the stables moments after Elias disappears. I stare after him, disbelieving. He is not the Elias I left even 2 weeks ago. The Elias who brought me back from the Nightbringer's Hell, who told me that we would find a way. But then I remember what he said. If I seem different, remember that I love you, no matter what happens to me. What in the skies happened to him? What was it inside me that lashed out at him? I think of what the Nightbringer said to me in Edessa. You know not the darkness that lies within your own heart. Deal with Elias later, liar. My mind reels. The city has fallen. I have failed, and the scholar slaves, they are trapped here. Antium is surrounded on three sides. Only the north end, built against Mount Videns, is not overrun with Karkans. That is where Cook and I entered the city, and that is how we will escape. That is how we will help the scholars escape. Because I know this feeling sweeping through me far too well. The feeling that all my effort, all I have worked for, means nothing. That everything and everyone is a lie. That all is cruel and unforgiving, and that there is no justice. I have survived this feeling before, and I will survive it again. In this fiery hellscape of a world, this mess of blood and madness, justice exists only for those who take it. I'll be damned if I'm not one of them. Girl, Cook appears from the streets. What has happened? Is the Mariner Embassy still clear? I ask her as we head away from the sounds of fighting. Have the Karkans taken that district, or can we escape that way? We can escape. Good, I say. We're getting as many scholars out as we can. Do you understand? I'm going to send them to you at the embassy. I need you to tell them where to go. The Karkans have broken through to the city's second level. They'll be at the embassy in a matter of hours. And then, what will you do? Escape with me now. The scholars will find their own way out. They will not, I say, because there is no way out. We're surrounded on three sides. They don't know there are escape routes. Let someone else do this. There is no one else. There is only us. This is a stupid idea, Cook says. That's going to get us both killed. I have never asked anything of you. I grab her hands and she flinches, but I hold tight to her. I never had the opportunity. I am asking you to do this for me. Please. I'll send them to the embassy. You lead them out. I do not wait for her response. I turn and run, knowing that she will not say no, not after what I just said to her. The scholars' district is in a panic, with people packing and searching for relatives and trying to fathom how they will escape the city. I stop one of the girls I see running across the main square. She looks a few years younger than me. "Where is everyone going?" I ask her. "No one knows where to go," she wails. "I can't find my mother, and the marshals are all gone. They must have started evacuating the city, but no one told us." "My name is Lyra of Sarah," I say. "The Karkans have broken through. They will be here soon, but I'm going to help you leave. Do you know where the Mariner Embassy is?" She nods, and I heave a sigh of relief. "Tell everyone, every scholar you see, to go to the Mariner Embassy. A scar-faced woman will take you out of the city. Tell them to go now, to leave their things and run." The girl nods rapidly and runs away. I grab another scholar, a man Darin's age, and give him the same message. Whoever will stop, whoever will listen, I tell them to go to the embassy, to find the scar-faced woman. I see recognition in the eyes of a few when I tell them my name, but the sounds of fighting draw closer, and no one is stupid enough to ask questions. The message spreads, and soon the scholars are fleeing the square en masse. I hope to the skies everyone in the district gets the message. Then I plunge into the city. The girl was right. The only marshals I see are soldiers, all of whom are running toward the fighting. I think of the wagon trains I saw leaving when Cook and I were approaching Antium. The wealthiest of the marshals left here weeks ago. They gave up on their capital and left the soldiers and the plebeians and the scholars to die. I spot a group of scholars clearing rubble under the direction of two marshals who aren't paying attention because they are listening to drum messages. They discuss the messages in low, urgent tones, as aware of the sounds of nearby fighting as I am. I use the marshal's distraction to sneak up to the scholars. "We can't simply run," a woman glances at the marshals fearfully. "They'll come after us." "You must," I say. "If you don't run from them now, you'll be running from the Karkans. But by then, you'll have nowhere to go." Another woman in the group hears, drops her pick and breaks away, and that is all the other scholars need. 60 of them scatter, the adults grabbing the few children, all disappearing in a dozen directions before the marshals can even understand what is happening. I urge the scholars on and stop to warn any others I see, asking them to pass on the message. By the time I reach the foreign district, I see hundreds of scholars streaming toward the embassy. A fight spills into the streets in front of me. A group of martial oxes battles a much larger force of Karkans. Though the barbarian steel breaks on the oxes' sims, the marshals are hard-pressed, overwhelmed by sheer numbers. If this is happening all over the city, then the barbarians will be in control of Antium by nightfall. I skirt around the battle, and when I get to the embassy, scholars spill out the doors. Cook's grumpy, raspy voice is instantly recognizable as she orders everyone down the steps and into the tunnels. "About bleeding time," Cook says when she sees me. "Get down there. A few of these slaves know the way out. Follow." Cook sees my face and groans when she realizes that I have no plans to leave, at least not until everyone is through. Even as she speaks, more scholars arrive. I see marshals now too, most of whom are plebeians, judging by their clothing. They are drawn by the crowd, assuming rightly that there is a reason so many scholars flock here. "Bleeding hells, girl," Cook says. "Do you see what you've done?" I gesture the marshals in. "I'm not going to tell a mother with a crying child she can't escape through here," I snap. "I don't care if she's marshal or not. Are you?" "Damn you, girl," Cook snarls. "You're just like your father." She presses her mouth closed and turns away in frustration. "Move, you bleeding sloths!" She unleashes her wrath on the scholars closest to her. "There are hundreds behind you who want to live as badly as you do." Urged on by Cook's threats, the scholars slowly make their way through the tunnels and the embassy begins to empty, but not swiftly enough. The Karkans are closing in, pouring through the streets. The marshals are overcome. As I watch, I see an ox squad go down, blood and viscera spraying the air red. And despite the fact that I know the Empire's evils firsthand, my eyes grow hot. I will never understand the savagery of war, even when it is my foes being destroyed. "Time to go, girl." Cook appears at my shoulder and shoves me down the steps to the cellar. I do not protest. No doubt there are scholars still left in the city, but I have done what I can. Help me with this! She bars the cellar door, her hands steady. Above, glass breaks, followed by the harsh barks of the carkins. Cook fiddles with something in the door, eventually pulling out what looks like a very long candle wick. Moments later, it is sparking. Take cover! We run to the door that leads to the tunnel, pulling it shut just as the ground begins shuddering. The tunnels groan, and for long moments, I worry that stones above us will collapse. But when the dust clears, the passageway has held, and I turn to Cook. Explosives? How? The mariners had a stockpile, Cook says. Moose's little friends showed me. Well, girl, that's it. Tunnel's sealed. Now what? Now, I say, we get the hells out of this city.
Chapter 55. The Bloodshrike. The Carkins flood Antium, breaching gate after gate, the screams of their warriors chilling me to my core. Their ghost-possessed fighters are gone, thanks perhaps to Elias. But the damage is done. They have decimated our forces. Marcus was right. The Empire's capital is lost. My rage is a pure glowing flame that drives me to tear through any carcan I see. And when in the distance I spot a familiar blonde figure making her way through the city with a handful of soldiers at her back, my anger burns white hot. You treacherous bitch! She stops when she hears me, but takes her sweet time turning around. How could you? My voice breaks. Your own people? Just for the throne? What is the point of being empress if you have no love for those you rule? If you have no one to rule over? Empress? She cocks her head. To be empress is the least of my desires, girl. Why stop at empress? Why, when the Nightbringer would offer me dominion over the tribes, the scholars, the mariners, the carkins, over all the world of man? No. Oh, bleeding hells, no. I lunge for her then, because I have nothing to lose now, no paters to placate, no orders to follow, just a bolt of wrath that possesses me like a demon spirit. She steps easily to the side, and in moments her men, all masks, have me pinned. A knife gleams in her hand, and she runs it lightly down my face, tracing my forehead, my cheeks. I wonder if it will hurt, she murmurs. Then she turns around, leaps onto her mount, and rides away. Her men hold me until she is long gone, before casting me to the side of a road, like offal. I do not chase them. I do not even look at them. The commandant could have killed me. Instead, she left me alive. Skies only know why, but I will not waste this chance. I listen to the drums, and soon enough I am racing toward the men of the Black Guard who still live, along with a few hundred soldiers, as they hold off a wave of attackers from a square in a Makata district. I search the faces for Dex, hoping to the skies that he's still alive, and nearly crush his ribs when he finds me. Where the bleeding hells are our men, Dex, I shout over the cacophony. This can't be all that's left. Dex shakes his head, bleeding from a dozen wounds. This is it. The evacuation? Thousands make their way through the Augur's caves. Thousands more are still in the tunnels. The entrances have been collapsed. Those who could get through... I hold up a hand. The drum tower closest to us thuds out a message. It is almost lost amid all the noise, but I just make out the end of it. Carkan force approaching Pilgrim's Gap. Harper has our people coming out just beyond the gap, I say. Livia, my mind screams at me. The baby... The Carkins must have scouts up there. If those bastards get through the gap, they'll slaughter everyone Harper has evacuated. Why follow us? Dex says. Why, when they know they have the city? Because Grimmar knows we won't let him keep Antium, I say, and he wants to make damn sure that while his men have the advantage, they kill as many of us as possible so we can't fight them later. I know what I must say, and I make myself say it. The city is lost. It belongs to Grimmar now. Skies help the poor souls who remain here under that fiend. I will not forget them, but right now I cannot save them, not if I want to save those who do have a chance at escape. Get out this order. Every soldier we have is to report to the Gap immediately. That is our last stand. If we stop them, that is where we will do it. By the time Dex, my men, and I reach the Gap, just beyond the northern border of the city, the Karkhan force is on the march, bent on crushing us. As I watch them pour out of Antium's northern gate and up the Pilgrim Road, I know that we will not win this battle. I have with me no more than 1,000 men. The enemy has more than 10,000, and thousands more they can call from the city if they must. Even with our superior blades, we cannot beat them. Pilgrim's Gap is a 10-foot-wide opening between two sheer cliffs that sit atop a wide valley. The Pilgrim Road curves across the valley, through the gap, and toward the Augur's Caves. I glance back over my shoulder, away from the Karkhans. I had hoped when I arrived that the Pilgrim Road would be empty, that the evacuees would have gotten through. But there are hundreds of marshals, and scholars I notice, on the road, and hundreds more emerging from the tunnel entrances to make their way up to the Augur's Caves. Get a message to Harper, I tell Dex. Take it yourself. White smoke when the last person is through. Then he's to collapse the entrance to the caves. He is not to wait. And neither are you. Shrike. That is an order, Lieutenant Atreus. You keep her safe. You keep my nephew safe. You see him on the throne. My friend stares at me. He knows what I am saying. That I don't want him back here. That I will die here today, with my people. And he will not. Duty first, he salutes. Unto death. I turn to my men. Masks, orcs, legionnaires. All have survived onslaught after onslaught. They are exhausted. They are broken. I have heard many pretty speeches as a soldier. I remember none of them. So in the end I dig up words that Karis gave me long ago, and I hope to the skies that they will come back to haunt her. There is success, I say, and there is failure. The land in between is for those too weak to live. Duty first! Unto death! They roar it back at me, and we form up, row upon row of shields and spears and sims. Our archers have few arrows, but they ready what they do have. The rumble in the valley grows louder as the Karkhans surge up the rise toward us, and now my blood sings, and I pull out my warhammer and snarl, "Come on, you bastards! Come for me!" And suddenly, the Karkhans are a distant rumble no more, but a thundering, frenzied horde of thousands who want nothing more than to annihilate all that is left of us. In the pass behind us, the pilgrims cry out. Now, I think, let us see what the marshals are made of. After an hour, the Karkhans have ripped through the front half of our forces. All is blood. And pain, and brutality. Still I fight, and the men fight beside me, as behind us, those fleeing the city continue up the road. Faster, I think at them, for the love of the skies, go faster. We wait for the white smoke as the Karkhans keep coming, wave upon wave. Our force dwindles from 500 men to 400, 200, 50. No smoke. The gap is too wide for us to hold it much longer. It is piled with bodies, but the Karkans simply climb over them and down, as if the hill is made of rock and not their dead countrymen. From the city a hellish sound rises. It is worse than the silence of Blackcliff after the third trial, worse than the tortured moans of Korf's prisoners. It is the screaming of those I left behind as they face the violence of the Karkans. The wolves are among my people now. We cannot falter. There are still hundreds on the Pilgrim Road and dozens emerging from the tunnels. A little more time. Just a little more. But we do not have more time, for to my left, two more of my men fall, cut down by cork and arrows. My hammer slips against my palm, slick from the blood that drenches every inch of my skin. But there are more coming. Too many. I cannot fight them all. I shout for aid. The only responses are the battle cries of the Karkans. Which is when I understand, finally, that I am alone. There is no one else left to fight at my back. All of my men are dead. And still, more Karkans surge over the wall of bodies. Skies, are their numbers unending? Will they ever give up? They will not, I realize, and it makes me want to scream and cry and kill. They will tear through this pass. They will be on the evacuees like jackals upon injured rabbits. I search the sky for white smoke. Please, please. And then I feel a sharp pain in my shoulder. Stunned, I look down to see an arrow sticking out of it. I deflect the next one that comes at me, but there are more bowmen coming. Too many. This is not happening. It cannot be. My sister is up there somewhere with the hope of the Empire held in her arms. She might not have reached the caves yet. At the thought of her, of young Zacharias, of the two little girls who said they'd fight the Karkans, I draw on every last bit of strength I have. I am a thing from the barbarians' nightmares, a silver-faced, blood-drenched demon of the hells, and I will not let them pass. I kill, and I kill, and I kill. But I am no supernatural creature. I am flesh and blood, and I am flagging. Please. Please. More time. I just need more time. But I have none. It is gone. One day soon you will be tested, child. All that you cherish will burn. You will have no friends that day. No allies. No comrades in arms. On that day, your trust in me will be your only weapon. I fall to my knees. Help me, I sob. Please, please help me, please. But how can he help me if he cannot hear me? How can he offer aid if he is not here? Bloodshrike. I whirl to find the Nightbringer standing just behind me. His hand rises and flicks, and the Karkans stop. Held back by the djinn's immense power. He surveys the carnage with dispassion. Then he turns to me, but does not speak. Whatever you want from me, take it, I say. Just save them, please. I want a bit of your soul, Shrike. You? I shake my head. I do not understand. Take my life, I say. If that is the price. I want a bit of your soul. I rack my mind desperately. I don't have. A memory comes to me. A ghost out of the darkness. Quinn's voice, weeks ago when I gave him Elias's mask. They become part of us, you know. It is only when they join with us that we become our truest selves. My father used to say that after the joining, a mask held a soldier's identity, a and that without it, a bit of his soul was stripped away, never to be recovered. A bit of his soul. It's just a mask, I say. It's not... The augurs themselves placed the last piece of a long-lost weapon in your mask, the Nightbringer says. I have known it since the day they gave it to you. All that you are. All that they molded you into. All that you have become. It was all for this day, Bloodshrike. I don't understand. Your love of your people runs deep. It was nurtured through all the years spent at Blackcliff. It grew deeper when you saw the suffering in Narvium and healed the children in the infirmary. Deeper when you healed your sister and imbued your nephew with the love you have of your country. Deeper still when you saw the strength of your countrymen as they prepared for the siege. It fused with your soul when you fought for them on the walls of Antium. And now, it culminates in your sacrifice for them. Take off my head, then, for I cannot remove it, I say, sobbing. It is part of me, a living part of my body. It has sunk into my skin. That is my price, the Nightbringer says. I will not take from you. I will not threaten you or coerce you. The mask must be offered with love in your heart. I look back over my shoulder at the pilgrim road. Hundreds make their way up, and I know thousands more are in the caves. We have already lost so many. We cannot lose more. You are all that holds back the darkness. For the Empire, for the mothers and fathers, for the sisters and brothers, for the lovers. For the Empire, Helene Aquila. For your people. I grab at my face and tear. I claw at my skin, howling, wailing, begging the mask to release me. I don't want you anymore. I just want my people to be safe. Release me, please, release me. For the Empire, release me. For my people, release me. Please, please. My face burns. Blood pours from where I have already clawed at the mask. Within, some essential part of me cries out at the recklessness with which I tear it away. A mask holds a soldier's identity. But I don't care about my identity. I don't even care if I'm a soldier anymore. I just want my people to live. To survive, to fight another day. The mask lets me go. Blood pours down my neck, my cheeks, into my eyes. I cannot see. I can hardly move. I retch from the searing agony of it. Take it! My voice is as raw as the cook's. Take it! And save them. Why do you offer it to me, Shrike? Say it. Because they are my people. I hold it out to him, and when he does not take it, I shove it into his hands. Because I love them. Because they do not deserve to die. Because I failed them. He inclines his head, a gesture of deep respect, and I sag to the ground. I wait for him to wave his hand and wreak havoc. Instead, he turns and walks away. Rising into the air like a leaf. No! Why isn't he fighting the Karkans? Wait! I trusted you, please, you said. You have to help me! He looks over his shoulder at something behind me, beyond me. I have. Bloodshrike. With that, he is gone. A dark cloud carried away by the wind. The power that held back the Karkans fails, and they tumble forward toward me, more than I can count, more than I can fight. Come back. I have no voice. It wouldn't matter if I did. The Nightbringer is gone. Skies, where is my warhammer, my sim, anything? But I have no weapons. no strength left in my body. I have nothing.
Chapter 56. Liar. When I emerge from the tunnels and into the bright sunlight, I grimace at the reek of blood. A massive pile of bodies sits 100 yards away at the base of a narrow gap. Through it, I can make out the city of Antium. And beside the bodies, on her knees with the dark-cloaked Nightbringer standing before her, is the Bloodshrike. I do not know what the Nightbringer says to the Bloodshrike. I only know that when she cries out, it sounds just like Nan did when she heard about my mother's death. Like I did when I understood how that djinn beast had betrayed me. It is a cry of loneliness, of betrayal, of despair. The djinn turns, looks in my direction, then he disappears on the wind. Girl, Cook scrambles up behind me, having swept the tunnels at my side to make sure that no one else lingered. The last scholars have long since disappeared. It is only us now. Let's go! They're coming! As more Karkans make their way through the gap, the Shrike crawls toward her warhammer, attempting to stand. She lurches around to look behind her at the sky, where a plume of white smoke curls into the heavens. She sobs and sinks to her knees, dropping her hammer, bowing her head. I know then that she is ready to die. I also know that I cannot let her. I am already moving, away from Cook, away from the path to safety, and toward the Bloodshrike. I throw myself at the Karkan attacking her, and as he snaps at my throat with his teeth, I shove my dagger in his gut and then push him away. I only just manage to pull my knife free in time to shove it into the throat of another Karkan. A third attacks me from behind, and I stumble and roll out of the way just as an arrow explodes through his head. My jaw drops as Cook lets arrow after arrow fly, executing the Karkans with the precision of a mask. She stops to snatch up a quiver full of arrows from the back of a dead Karkan. Grab the Shrike! Cook gets her arm under the Bloodshrike's left shoulder, and I take her right. We stagger up the Pilgrim Road as swiftly as we can, but the Shrike can barely walk, and our progress is slow. There! Cook nods to a cluster of boulders. We clamber behind it and put the Shrike down. Dozens of Karkans climb through the gap. Soon, it will be hundreds. We have a few minutes, if that. How the hells do we get out of this? I whisper to Cook. We can't just leave her. Do you know why the Commandant never fails, girl? Cook doesn't seem to expect a reply to her bizarrely timed question, because she barrels on. Because no one knows her story. Learn her story, and you'll learn her weakness. Learn her weakness, and you can destroy her. Talk to Musa about it. He'll help you. Why are you telling me this now? Because you're going to take vengeance on that savage demon queen for me, she says. And you need to know. Get up. Get the Shrike up that mountain. The marshals are going to seal off those caves soon enough. If they haven't already, you need to move quickly. A group of Karkans races up the Pilgrim Road toward us, and Cook rises and shoots a dozen arrows. The barbarians fall, but more come through the gap. I have another 50 arrows, girl, Cook says. Once I'm out, we're done for. We could fight 3 or 4 of those bastards at the most, not hundreds, not thousands. One of us has to hold them off. Oh no. I take her meaning now. Finally, I understand what she is saying. Absolutely bleeding. No, I will not leave you here to die. Go! My mother shoves me toward the Shrike, and though her teeth are bared, her eyes are filled with tears. You don't want to save me. I'm not worth it. Go! I will not. Do you know what I did in Koff prison, girl? There is hatred in her eyes as she says it. Before I knew who she was, I would have thought that hate was directed at me. I understand now that it was never for me. It was for herself. If you did, you would run. I know what you did. Now is not the time to be noble. I grab her arm and try to drag her toward the shrike. She doesn't budge. You did it to save Darren and me, because Father and Liz weren't strong like you. And you knew that they would give us up eventually, and then we'd all die. I knew that the moment I learned of it, Mother. I forgave you the moment I learned of it. But you have to come with me. We can run. Damn you, girl! Cook grabs me by the shoulder. Listen to me. One day you will have children, and you will learn that you would rather suffer 1,000 torments than let one hair on their heads be harmed. Give me this gift. Let me protect you as I should have protected Lilis. The name bursts from her lips. As I should have protected your fa-fa-fa. She snarls at her inability to speak and spins away, knocking her bow, letting arrow after arrow loose. The ghost will fall. Her flesh will wither. The ghost was never me. It was her. Mirror of Sarah, risen from the dead. But if that's the case, then this is one line of the prophecy. I will fight. Mother spins, grabs a shrike, and heaves her up. The blood shrike's eyes flutter open, and she leans heavily on my mother, who then shoves her at me. I have no choice but to catch her, my knees nearly buckling at the sudden weight. But the shrike rights herself, trying to stay steady on her feet, using me as support. I love you, la-la-liar! The sound of my name on Mother's lips is more than I can bear. And I am shaking my head, trying to tell her no through my sobs. Not again. Not again. Tell your brother everything, she says. If he doesn't know already, tell him I am proud of him. Tell him that I am sorry. She rises up from the rocks and darts away, drawing the Karkin's fire as she skewers them with more arrows. No! I scream. But she is doing this. And if I don't move, it will be for nothing. I look at her for one more moment, and I know I will never forget how her white hair snaps like a victory banner, and how her blue eyes shine with fury and determination. She is finally the lioness, the woman I knew as a child, and somehow more. Bloodshrike! I call to her as I turn up the pilgrim road. Wake up! Please! Who? She tries to see me, but her ravaged face is drenched with blood. It's Lyra, I say. You must walk, do you understand? You must! I saw white smoke. Walk, Shrike! Walk! Step by step, we make our way up the pilgrim road until we are high enough to see over the bodies and into the Karkin force, diminished but still enormous. High enough to watch as my mother picks them off one by one, grabbing the arrows the Karkins are hailing down upon her, giving us as much time as she can. And then I do not look back any more. I just move, half dragging, half urging the blood shrike onward and upward. But it is too far, and the shrike is too injured. Her clothes soaked with blood, her body heavy with pain. I'm so sorry, she whispers. Go. Go on without.
Bloodshrike!
A voice from up ahead and a flash of silver. I know that face. The mask who helped me at Koth. The one who set me free months ago. Avitus Harper.
Thank the bleeding skies!
I've got this side, Lyra.
Harper throws the shrike's other arm over his shoulder, and together we pull her up the path, then down across a shallow bowl to a cave where a handsome, dark-skinned mask waits. Dex Atreus.
Harper. Harper.
The shrike slurs in a whisper.
Hold you. Collapse the tunnels. You disobeyed orders.
With respect, shrike. They were stupid bleeding orders,
Harper says.
Stop talking.
I twist my head around as we enter the cave. From this height, I can see down the hill to the gap. To the Karkans who are now making their way up the path with no one to block their way.
No,
I whisper.
No, no, no.
But we are in the cave now, Dex ushering us forward quickly.
Blast it, Avitus says. Lyra, come quickly. They're not far behind.
I don't want to leave her,
I want to scream.
I don't want her to die alone. I don't want to lose her again.
When we are at the end of a long passage lined with blue fire torches, an earth-shattering rumble booms out, followed by the unmistakable sound of thousands of pounds of rocks falling. And then, silence. I slip down onto the ground beside the shrike. She cannot see me, but she reaches out her hand and takes mine. You knew her, she whispers. The cook. It takes me a long time to answer. By the time I do, the shrike has lost consciousness. Her name was Mira of Sarah. I speak, though no one can hear me. And yes, I knew her.
Part 5. Beloved.
Chapter 57. The Blood Shrike. Lyra of Sarah cannot hold a tune to save her life, but her hum is sweet and light and strangely comforting. As she moves around the edges of the room, I try to get a sense of my surroundings. Lamplight filters through an enormous window, and I feel a nip in the air, a sign that summer closes in the north. I recognize the low, arched buildings beyond the window and the large square it faces. We are in Delphinium. There is a weight to the air, a heaviness. Distantly, lightning flashes over the Nevinus. I can smell the storm. My face feels strange, and I reach my hands up. The mask. The djinn. I thought it had been a nightmare. But as I feel my own skin for the first time in 7 years, I realize that it was not a dream. My mask is gone, and a piece of my soul with it. Lyra hears me move and turns. I see the blade at her waist, and on instinct I reach for my own.
No need for that, Bloodshrike.
She tilts her head, her face not exactly friendly, but not unkind either.
We didn't drag you through 100 miles of caves, so your first act upon waking would be to stab me.
A cry sounds from nearby, and I force myself to sit up, eyes wide. Lyra rolls her eyes.
The Emperor, she says, is always hungry, and when he doesn't get food, skies help us all.
Livy, there.
Safe.
A shadow flickers across the scholar girl's face, but she hides it quickly.
Yes. Your family is safe.
A whisper of movement at the door, and Avitas is there. Immediately Lyra excuses herself. I understand her quick smile, and I flush. For just a second, I see the look on Harper's face, not the carefully controlled blankness that all masks wear, but the heartfelt relief of a friend. Though if I am being honest, it is not the look of someone who thinks of me as just a friend. I would know.
I want to say something to him. You came for me. You and Lyra dragged me from the claws of death himself. You have more of your father's goodness in you than you will ever acknowledge. Instead, I clear my throat and swing my legs, shaking with weakness, over the side of the bed. Report, Captain Harper. His silver eyebrows flick up for a moment, and I think I see frustration in his eyes. He crushes it, the way I would. He knows me by now. He knows what I need. We have 7,520 marshals who fled Antium, he says. Another 1,634 scholars. We believe that at least 10,000 more, Illustrians and Mercators, left before the invasion, or were siphoned out by the Commandant. And the rest? Half died in the siege. The other half remains the prisoners of the Karkans. The barbarians have enslaved them. As we knew they would. Then we must free them, I say. What of Karras? She retreated to Serra and established the capital there. Avitas pauses, attempting to get hold of his anger. The Illustrian Paters have named her Empress, and the Empire has embraced it. Antium's fall is blamed on Marcus and... and on me. I led the defense of the city, after all. I failed. Quinn Veturius has pledged his fealty to Emperor Zacharias and Gens Aquila, Harper says, as have the Illustrian Gens of Delphinium. The Commandant has declared your nephew an enemy of the Empire. All who support him or his claim are to be crushed forthwith. None of what he says surprises me, not any more. All my plotting and scheming was for nothing. If I'd have known civil war was inevitable, I'd have killed Karras outright, whatever the consequences. At least Antium wouldn't be in the hands of Grimmar. The storm rolls closer, and rain begins to patter thinly on the cobblestones outside. Harper stares openly at me, and I turn my head away, wondering how my face must look. I wear black fatigues, but without my mask I feel strange. Naked. I remember what the Commandant said before she fled Antium. I wonder if it will hurt. She knew. It's why she left me alive. The Nightbringer must have ordered it. Harper lifts a hand to my cheek and traces one side, then the other. You haven't seen yourself, he says. I haven't wanted to. You have scars, he says. Two of them, like twin Sims. Do I? The words come out, a whisper, and I brusquely clear my throat. How bad is it? They are beautiful. His green eyes are thoughtful. Your face couldn't be anything but beautiful, Lord Shrike, with or without the mask. My blush rises, and this time there is no mask to hide it. I don't know what to do with my hands. My hair must look a mess. I must look a mess. Doesn't matter. It's just Harper. But it's not just Harper anymore, is it? He was loyal to the Commandant. He tortured you on Marcus's orders. But he was never truly loyal to Karras. As for the interrogation, how the hells can I judge him for that after what I ordered Dex to do to Mamie, to Tribe Scythe? He's Elias's brother. My thoughts are a welter of confusion. I cannot make sense of them. Avitas reaches for my hands, pulling them into his own, examining them with such care. He draws a line up my forearm with the tip of his finger, from one freckle to another. At that feather-like touch, every nerve ending in my body awakens. I inhale unsteadily, tormented by his scent, by the triangle of skin at his throat. He leans close. The curve of his lower lip is the only softness in a face that looks cut from stone. I wonder, do his lips taste the way I think they must, like honey and cinnamon tea on a cold night? When I lift my gaze to his, he hides nothing. Finally, finally unmasking his desire. The power of it is dizzying, and I do not protest when he pulls me close. Arvatar stops when he's a hair's breadth from my lips. Careful. Always so careful. In that moment of waiting, he lays himself bare. Only if you want it. I close the distance, my own need tearing through me with a force that leaves me shaken. I expected my impatience. I did not anticipate his. For someone who is always so infuriatingly calm, he kisses like a man who will never be sated. More. I crave his hands in my hair, his lips on my body. I should get up, lock the door. It is the intoxicating force of that impulse that stops me cold, that compresses my thoughts into two equally clear sentiments. I want him, but I cannot have him. As suddenly as I met Harper's lips, I pull myself away. His green eyes are dark with want, but when he sees my expression, he inhales sharply. Look at me. He is about to say my name, my heart's name, the way he did in his mind when I sang him well. And if I let him, I will be undone. Look at me, Hell. Bloodshrike, Captain Harper. I harness my training and give him my coldest glare. He is a distraction. Only the Empire matters. Only your people matter. The Marshals are in far too much danger for either of us to allow distractions. I withdraw my hands from his sharply. I am the Bloodshrike. You would do well to remember it. For a moment, he is frozen, pain flashing nakedly across his face. Then he stands and salutes, the consummate mask once more.
Of course, Bloodshrike, sir. Permission to return to duty.
Granted. After Harper leaves, I feel hollow, lonely. Voices rise from nearby, and I force myself to my feet and down the hallway. Thunder growls, close enough to mask my footsteps as I approach the open door to what must be Livia's room.
People saved you from the Karkans, though doing so put them at great risk. I beg you, Empress, begin your son's reign with an act befitting a true emperor. Free the scholar slaves.
It's not so simple.
I recognize Faris's rumble.
Isn't it?
The clarity and strength in my sister's voice make me stand up taller. She always hated slavery, like our mother. But unlike mother, it's clear she plans to do something about it.
Lyra of Sarah does not lie. A group of scholars saved us from the Karkans, who infiltrated the tunnels. They carried me when I was too weak to walk, and it was a scholar who nursed Emperor Sicarius when I lost consciousness. We found the mosses that fed your people in the tunnels.
Lyra's voice is arch and I scowl.
If not for us, you'd have all starved to death. You've made a just case for your people.
Livia's voice is so calm the tension dissipates instantly.
As Empress Regent, I decree that every scholar who escaped the tunnels is now a free man. Lieutenant Faris, pass the news to the Paters of Delphinium. Captain Dex, ensure that the martial response is not overly emotional.
I step into the room then, and Livia takes a step toward me, stopping short at my warning glare. I shift my attention to the dark-haired bundle on the bed, freshly fed and fast asleep.
He got bigger, I say, surprised. They do that,
Lyra smiles.
You should not yet be up and about, Bloodshrike.
I wave off her fussing but sit when my sister insists.
Did you see Elias, Lyra? Did you speak with him?
Something in her face changes. A fleeting pain I know all too well. She has spoken with him then. She has seen what he's become. He's returned to the forest. I have not tried to find him. I wanted to make sure you were well first, and... "And you've been busy," I say.